Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Just a reminder, those of you who are listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. We're going to visit the Den of Strangers, visit our Fountain of Useless Information, and, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's get right to today's guest. What do you say?
Stand by.
Well, we're covering the events that's going on at the Homeland Security Technologies Conference. We talk about that in this program a lot. It's going on November 13th through the 15th. You can find out more about that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link to the conference, and we're fascinated with some of the speakers that are going on. Right at the moment, I want to introduce you to Steve Shope. Steve is got a sensational background. He's been with Bell Labs, MIT Lincoln Labs, Motorola Semiconductor, retired a few years ago, and got to feeling bad about all these people that are having trouble losing their homes in the wildfires, and have come up with a remarkable invention that's going to be a feature at the Homeland Security Technologies Conference. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Thank you, Colonel Mason.
Now, tell us how this came about. You were sitting watching television, minding your own business, nicely retired, underfoot for your wife. She's wishing you'd get out of the house. And all of a sudden, you say to yourself, wow, I can come up with a solution to help these people who are losing their homes in wildfires? Is that how it happened?
Yes, it was. I saw pictures of people fighting wildfires, and I saw the little tiny hoses and squirting water on the ground. There was it didn't look very effective. And the only thing that you see is them with the planes flying over and dropping the retardant. And then there were quite a few planes that were crashing and killing the people in the planes. And it just bothered me as an engineer. And so I started thinking about it from a fundamental reason as to why can't you get more water? And I'm an electrical engineer, but the good thing is that engineering is sort of based on underlying laws of physics, so that if you understand one field like electrical, you can move over to mechanical or fluids or whatever, hydraulics. So I started looking into it, and I found that there is a way to move water longer distance. Let me back up and say that normally you can, with a hose, you can only pump water so far through it, and it's about a mile. And the reason is that you can get pumps that have extremely high pressures, but a hose is made out of a flexible material, and it's not steel. Mm-hmm. So if you put too much pressure into it, it'll burst. So I found that, generally speaking, you can only pump water through a hose about a mile. And if you want to go farther than that, you have to have a pump at the end of that mile that then pumps the next mile of hose, which goes to another pump. So you can go on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I found out that in this Boston area, the headquarters of the National Fire Protection Association is only some miles away from where I live. And I went there and found out that they have a library, fantastic library on wildfires and fighting fires, and it's open to the public. So I spent many, many hours studying the books and magazines, and at some point I was asking the librarian some questions, and she couldn't answer them. So she called somebody, and a gentleman came down, and he was a fairly high-level person at the National Fire Protection Association.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at what I was doing, and he said, "This is very interesting," and sort of encouraged me to keep going. And then he said, "By the way, would you like to join a technical committee?" And I said, "Well, I think so." So I ended up joining a technical committee, but it was not related to wildfires. It was electronic equipment that gets used when people are fighting fires, things like infrared cameras where they can see through the smoke, mm-hmm. and alarm systems where if somebody falls down, a man down kind of a thing. You shouldn't say man, firefighter down. You have to be very sensitive to never say man, I'm sorry. So when a firefighter falls, then an alarm will go off and people will know that he's not moving and mm-hmm. rescue him. So I went to the committee, but the downside of the committee was that I had to be a volunteer, and I had to fly myself to these different meetings all around the country and put up my own hotel rooms and pay for it. And I'm retired, and my wife was not too happy about all this, so I kept it up for a while.
Yeah.
But one time I was in their library. I wasn't making actually a lot of progress with it, but something did come out of it, which was I went to a meeting and I was talking to a California fire chief, and he, at the time, he wasn't enthusiastic about the way I was doing my system, and I understand why. I was proposing putting electric wires in the hoses that would power electric pumps, and the firemen don't like the idea of electric wires, even though theoretically it was safe. So I realized that's not a bad idea. But what he told me was that my system might be useful for in California and other places when there are earthquakes. The water mains tend to get snapped, so entire areas of the cities or regions don't have water in their hydrants.
Oh,
and there's no water in the homes.
Yeah.
And earthquakes often cause fires because there are gas lines that are breaking, and firemen come and they don't have access to water. They can only carry so much water in tankers. So that remark by him resulted in this paper that I am having published at the IEEE conference mm-hmm. on resupplying water after an earthquake. So the meetings came out, the conferences were a very worthwhile thing. One time I was in the library there and I was frustrated, so I started just flipping through every magazine that had any relevance to wildfires, just looking for some way to get moving. Excuse me. And I noticed a little advertisement for the International Association of Wildland Fire, which nobody had ever mentioned to me.
Okay.
So I looked into it, mm-hmm. and they are an organization that is specialized. They're international, and they have a magazine, and they have conferences. So I joined them, and I went to a first conference, and I got the feel of the place. And then I went to a second conference, and at this conference, they kept showing a lot of movies of wildfires, this wildfire and that wildfire. So there were lots and lots of movies of wildfires. And at the end of the day, I went up to my bedroom, and I got into bed, and I said, there was going to be another movie that evening on yet another famous fire. And I said, do I really want to watch another fire, or do I want to watch television? And I said, well, I'm here, and you never know what's going to happen, so that's my attitude. It's just keep going for it. You know, if you can meet somebody, meet them.
Mm-hmm.
Network, network, as you always hear. So I went and saw the movie, and at the end of the movie, a woman got up at the front and said, if anybody's interested in writing an article for the magazine, come and see me. And I said, wow. So I went and spoke to her about my ideas, and she said, that's very interesting. Why don't you try? So I wrote an article, and then people reviewed it and gave me some comments back, and I improved it, and we iterated for a while. And then it actually got published about a year ago in this international magazine, describing my inventions. And that was like the first really big step. And in fact, the Colonel, I think, is going to put on his website, I'm going to put a link to my website where you can see some of my work, and also the article. I've been allowed by the IEEE to put a copy on my website, so I think you'll find that interesting.
Yeah, I think so. The website will be fascinating, and we'll certainly have a link to your website at our website. You'll be able to find it by going to promiseoftomorrow.biz and search our website, and they'll see a link to your website. But why don't you tell us what the address of your website is right now for those who want to just go directly to it?
Yes, thank you. www.electric-fluid.com Pipeline.com, and it actually has my my email address is also on the site if anybody wants to contact me directly. And then I would like to say that I'm an alum of MIT, and living near MIT is a good, wonderful thing, really. And I joined an entrepreneurs club on the campus. Mm-hmm. And I became friendly with a very brilliant MIT mechanical engineering student at the club. And by an amazing stroke of luck, he is an expert on the electronic engine control systems that are on diesel engines and also gasoline engines. So you, when you're in your car, when that light comes on, it says check engine. There's a whole little digital network that runs in the car, and that's there in order to cut down on the amount of wiring in the wiring harnesses that are, even though the harnesses are big, they would be five times as big if you didn't have one of these networks. Mm-hmm. So I'm using in my system the idea of putting the, let me go back now to the big system of fighting, of moving water from pump to pump to pump.
Okay.
The trick is the pumps have to be brought up and down together. You can't have one pump turn off accidentally while the others are still pumping. It's not obvious, but water is very heavy, and fast-moving heavy water creates something called water hammer, and it can shatter the pumps and the hoses.
Oh, wow.
So you have to have excellent radio communications. If you have five or six people who are standing at the pumps, they all have to be on the radio. They all have to get the message. And if somebody is behind a hill, if the hose goes up a hill and then down the hill, the guy who's down the hill doesn't get good radio reception. These handheld radios don't go in curves, they go in line of sight.
Sure.
So these techniques of doing multiple pumps are rarely used, and that's the thing. So I found a hose that's readily available that has a wire in it, that it's embedded in there. And this hose has been used by the military in Iraq and Afghanistan to supply diesel fuel and water, which is a good thing for me, to the troops that are some number of miles away, because they need a lot of diesel. Mm-hmm. And they need a lot of water. And there are systems out there that do use radios to communicate, but they're in a flat terrain there in the desert.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I found a way to use this hose, and with the wire embedded inside, there's sort of an Ethernet-type network that connects all of these pumps, and you can control them very well. You can monitor their status. You can bring them up and down together. And also, the firefighters can actually communicate over this Ethernet-type link in case they don't have radio contact. So it's all described in the paper in Wildfire Magazine that you can see on the link. The co-author on my paper is Mike Lascaris. This is the paper at the IEEE. Mm-hmm. He's the director of engineering at Hale Pumps. And Hale Pumps is one of the largest fire pump manufacturing companies in the United States. And how I met him is I Googled and found out about Hale, and I called up the company and asked if I could speak to their director of engineering, and I got him, and I said, "Excuse me, sir, I'm an engineer, and I have an idea. Do you have a minute?" And he gave me a minute, and then he continued to talk to me. And over time, he was helping me talk, how to build this system. And eventually, he started adding more suggestions to my paper for the IEEE. So I said to him, "Mike, would you like to be a co-author on this?" And he said, "Sure." So If I had published the paper just by myself, people would say, "Well, this is just Steve Shope. He's an electrical engineer. And what does he know about pumps and hoses and systems?" But when Mike, he's director of engineering at Hale, he's a co-author of the paper. It makes the paper like 10 times more important. So it's just like making a phone call, it was really important. I'd like to say a few words about patents. When you're an inventor, it's an important thing to know about. You know, your ideas are good, but patents protect you from other people just using your ideas. So I have two U.S. patents for the system concept. I also have two pending Canadian patents. I'll tell you something. If you're going to do a search, which a search is when you first get an idea, before you're going to even think of spending any money on it, you have to search and see if it's already been invented, because a lot of people waste a lot of money. The patent office, their job, the examiners, is to see what you did, and then they have all the best computers and the libraries and staff, and they work. That's their job, to find an old patent that, you know, you are violating. Or here's the thing, even if the old patent is expired, okay, you can't get a new patent on an old idea. So it's critical that you understand what's already been done before, and it's very hard work. Now, if you're an engineer or somebody who's, you know, pretty good at searching things and you know how to use search terms and those kind of things, I could tell unbelievable stories of, I paid money to people to search for me, and they did a horrible job. And this is funny, one patent lawyer in New York did a terrible search for me. I threatened him, and he gave me my money back. And somebody told me, lawyers never give money back, so that's kind of interesting. I kind of nailed him. Once you've invented something, that's the easy part, actually. Getting anybody to pay attention, and at the moment, trying to get somebody to buy a system or invest, that's the really hard part. So how do you get the information out there?
Yeah, well, I want to know about this neighborhood protection system. You have a patent on that, I guess, and is it being adopted anywhere for getting water to places with earthquakes? I mean, what's the status of it right at the moment, or is it still in the concept stage?
Well, here's my announcement. We have created the original system, and the one that's in the IEEE article is kind of a big system where the government would have to buy it, or big, you know, it's a big thing. But we found a way to do something that's smaller but very effective. So I've created a very low-cost version of the hose system that can be used to protect entire neighborhoods from wildfire. So you have a truck that drives around the neighborhood and lays a hose onto the ground. This hose can spray a wall of water into the air, or foam, only where needed. And that's the difference. It's got the little wires in there and a little network, and only certain segments of the hose spray, so you don't have to spray everywhere.
Okay.
A one-mile-long hose can protect, let's say, 20 homes on half-acre lots. And a one-mile system would cost around $150,000. So that's not a lot of money for that kind of protection. If you lose a home, one home could be $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
So now, here's the thing. A major fire equipment company will build the system if I can get a customer. And I'm thinking that one of the customers that I'm working on right now, the idea is that there are private insurance companies have policies with wealthy people where they will send a crew of special fire trucks just to protect that particular home or that particular neighborhood. So there's sort of, you know, in Colorado, they lost maybe 300 and some homes in that Waldo Canyon fire. That's a tremendous amount of money, and the insurance company is going to have to pay for that. So I think the insurance companies have an incentive to look into this system, and that's where I'm kind of focusing. But if anybody else out there knows somebody who wants to have a small system that's portable, and you can drive it to where you need it and set it up very quickly, and all you need is a source of water, which could be a swimming pool, could be a tanker truck, maybe the hydrants if you trust them. So that's where we stand. I definitely have a commitment from a large company who we agree we can build this system very simply. There's a demo that I have on my website where it's on YouTube. It's me pushing buttons on this Ethernet kind of network, and I have lights blinking and things like that. I've programmed it myself, so I know the electrical part, and this other company knows the fire pumping valve part, and we're in agreement that this thing is easy and we can do it, and we're looking for customers.
Great, Steve. We're going to get to meet you and know more about the things that you're doing at the Homeland Security Technology Conference, November 13th through the 15th at the Westin Hotel in Waltham, Massachusetts, November. So we'll look forward to that. Before we get out of here, do you have you put on the meditation cap for a minute and give us a view into the future? What do you see? Do you have a future prediction for us?
Yes. Unfortunately, I wish it were more positive, but I think there are going to be more large wildfires. Now, I get the Wildfire magazine, and there was a quote from the president of the International Association of Wildland Fire. It was an editorial, and he says, quote, "There is a threatening, escalating wildland fire crisis around the globe," end quote. And I'm saying, droughts are weakening trees. Warmer winters are allowing the spread of beetles that are killing entire forests in the American West. And weak and dead trees are fuel for megafires. I hope that my inventions can help protect homes and forests. And thank you very much, Colonel Mason.
All right, very good. That's a prediction for the future. Now, what about some life lesson that you learned maybe late in life, something you wish you would have learned earlier, something that your life's creed or something you want to pass on to a younger generation or to a coworker or to maybe an old guy like me? What is a good word of wisdom you have for us?
Okay, I have a few that I thought of for you. That you've heard it 100 times, but network, network, network. You just have to get out and meet a lot of different people. I've done it, and it makes a huge difference. And go to conferences like the IEEE conference. Somebody once said that more things get accomplished at the bar than the dining tables than do at the sessions. And I you have to meet people. The other thing is to ask for help. You just have to ask people for things. Now, the actual response is pretty bad. I mean, I'm estimating between one out of 100 and 1 out of 1,000 people will actually do anything. So you have to not get discouraged. Use the internet to learn about your market and then to connect with people. And something that somebody told me was, don't email people, make phone calls. And he's very emphatic about that. And this guy kind of knows. And it did work for me when I called the pump company and spoke to the guy. And here we are. He's the co-author on a paper. So I think that's it. Network, you have to meet people. Being an inventor is nice, but you have to be social too. I've been working with Fausto Molinet, a business development consultant. He's been very helpful to me. He's a good engineer, but he lets me do most of the engineering while he finds opportunities to move the business plans forward. He encouraged me to write the paper that was accepted at the IEEE Homeland Security Conference, and I appreciate that very much.
All right. Steve Shope, inventor of the Neighborhood Protection System, speaker at the Homeland Security Technologies Conference, November 13th through the 15th in Waltham, Massachusetts. You've been a wonderful guest, and I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you for the chance to speak, Carl. My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today? Wow, would you listen to this? It's Dewey and Truman debating from the 1948 campaign.
We agreed that this was too grave a time for politics as usual. He opened his mouth and he closed his eyes. And he swallowed the terrible record of that good-for-nothing 80th Congress.
These members of Congress are described as predatory animals. Each has a moss back.
Sounds to me like the same old phonograph record. But this year, the record has a crack.
Now, why do you suppose grown-up men would ever have used such desperate tactics in a free election anyway?
I don't care about that. I don't care what they say. There's nothing new they can say about me. It's all been said.